from the 1959 album The Shape of Jazz to Come by the Ornette Coleman Quartet. That was Lonely Woman. It's the track that Charlie Hayden himself had selected to open the Jazz Library programme focusing on his own work. Charlie died from the long-term effects of polio last month. I'll be back at 5 next Saturday, and in the meantime, do get in touch with your requests. The address, jazz.record.requests@bbc.co.uk by email, or by post to Jazz Record Request, BBC Radio 3 Broadcasting House, London W1A 1AA. But now it's time here on BBC Radio 3 for Jazz Lineup with Claire Martin.
Hello. On today's edition of the show, an interview with legendary Jamaican pianist Monty Alexander.
I try to tell other players who are interested in knowing, and I remind myself that one of the best things you can do when you go to play your instrument, whatever that instrument is, how did you feel when you were a child and you first sat at your piano or your guitar or your saxophone when you pick it up to play? And that's what I get from some of those masters of all. And when Sonny Rollins picks up his tenor sax, he's a kid again. And then he goes off into wherever he goes.
Monty Alexander. And stay tuned for the full interview and music from Monty later on. And also on this week's programme, a special concert set from the winners of the 2014 European Jazz Competition, Philip Ayers Quartet, featuring tantalising sounds like this. And more music from that award-winning set from the Philip Ayers Quartet later on the show. But let's start with something from a brand new box set out on the 21st of August, a double CD of Herbie Hancock's complete Warner Brother years, during which he recorded three records, Fat Albert Rotunda, Wandishi and Crossing. These two discs present two very different visions of what can be achieved with an electric setting between the years of 1969 to 1972. Where the collection opens with a track that reiterates the fact that Herbie is truly the inventor of this type of tune. It's the super funky Wiggle Waggle. We'll be right back. Wiggle Waggle by Herbie Hancock, originally released on the album Fat Albert Rotunda, now re-released as part of a beautifully packaged box set, bringing together three rare albums, singles and promotional recordings. Herbie Hancock, The Warner Brothers Years, is out on the 21st of August. On her latest album, acclaimed jazz singer Sarah Muller's recorded seven new songs by pianist and arranger Simon Wallace and the lyrics of Fran Landesman. Alongside new lyrics by Julie Burchill, two blues numbers and imaginative reworkings of classic songs. The album is called Songs from the Floating World, and she's in fine voice on all the tracks. The addition of Hammond organ gives my chosen track just the right amount of added gospel flavour as she sings, Lord, I Wanna Be Good.
Guide said, do not pity them, man. That's the scene they've chosen. The flames of Hades used to wait for anyone who fell. They must have been brave sinners then, when men believed in hell. Oh, Lord, I wanna be good. The devil's gonna get me. I'd like to quit this cheerful life, but the music just won't let me. I try to keep my hands off you, I try to stay away, but I would gamble all my soul to have you one more day.
From the album Songs from the Floating World, which is out on the 15th of September on Red Ram Records. That was singer Sarah Moore singing the Fran Landesman lyric, Lord, I Wanna Be Good, with Simon Wallace on keyboards, Mick Hutton on bass, Paul Robinson on drums, Nigel Price on guitar, and Gary Hammond on percussion. Sarah will be launching her new CD on September the 16th at the Pizza Express in Soho, London. And you can also see her at the Scarborough Jazz Festival on September the 27th. Something brand new now from Latin jazz quintet Head South, who are a relatively new ensemble who combine Cuban and other Latin-influenced rhythms in their effervescent and sophisticated original compositions. Featuring trumpeter Steve Waterman, band leader and composer John Harriman, Buster Birch is on drums and percussion, Cuban percussionist Chino Martel Morgan plays with them, and their newest member, Venezuelan bassist Aldofredo Pulido. From the album On The Way, this is the track La Plaza.
Thank you.
Head south with La Plaza from their new release On The Way, which is released on September the 30th on Aline Records. And the band will be on tour from September the 13th to the 27th, and the album has its official launch at the St James's Theatre Studio in London on October the 4th. For more information, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. And this is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. A few weeks ago, Jazz Lineup's Kevin Legendre caught up with the entertaining Oscar Peterson-influenced Jamaican pianist Monty Alexander when he was in the UK doing a string of dates at Ronnie Scott's club in London. Before we hear that interview, here's Monty from his latest album, Harlem Kingston Express, Volume 2, The River Rolls On, with his version of the 1971 hit by The Stylistics, People Make the World Go Round. Thank you.
People Make the World Go Round by the great Monty Alexander from the album Harlem Kingston Express Volume 2, The River Rolls On. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Monty Alexander. Welcome to Jazz Lineup.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
You've just turned 70 years young and you look in fine fettle. And I know that this new album, in a lot of ways, is a kind of celebration, not just of your music, but of who you are as a person. There's a fantastic statement that you make in the sleeve notes that you've written. I'm a Jamaican, I'm an American, I'm a proud Jamaican. Identity crisis, no, identity's embraced.
That's right.
It's a really, really strong statement make. Because you've really been a kind of a cultural hybrid, as it were. You know, somebody who's always been very, very proud to be Jamaican, engaged with America. I think you've been living in America for a long time, but you've got strong links with Jamaica. Mm-hmm. This whole project, because it's the second volume of the Harlem Kingston Express.
Yes.
When did that kind of first flower in your mind, the idea of sort of really putting your finger on what makes you an artist and what makes you the person that you are, this kind of dual identity?
I always knew that I was unique in that I come from this wonderful place, Jamaica, and I was getting in on things USA, socially, musically, and meeting all these amazing musicians who accepted me warmly, you know. And
when you moved to America?
When I moved to America in the early 60s.
Early 60s, yeah.
And I was, because the gift I have allows me to merge with people and fit in, and people make the world go round.
Absolutely.
You know? And how we are with each other. And I found that when musicians came together, it was just about the best part of the day because we became like family. But I always said to myself, you know, I'd love to be able to express myself musically where I have these both sides of me emerge at the same time, because it's totally unique. And of course, the whole success of popular music out of Jamaica as those years went by, you know, in the ska, which I was in the studios in Jamaica a part of, and then rocksteady and reggae and all this happened. And I'm, you know, trying to bring that into what I'm doing in the US, and the American jazz, incredible jazz players, they don't know that culture. They didn't grow up. They don't
know. It's something different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a unique, your own personal experience, cultural experience, heritage. And one day, sometime, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, I said, I want to have a group of musicians where at the drop of a hat, I can go to whatever location. Musically.
You can play ska, you can play mento, you can play reggae, you can play jazz,
exactly.
You swing, you groove, there's
exactly.
the shuffle, the offbeat, there's everything in there.
It's all there, and not only that, but the men helping me to do it are the most incredible musicians in the world, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I have the Harlem Kingston is just a catchphrase. Indeed, I played in Harlem in the 60s at Minton's Playhouse. I was there on several occasions. Worked there for 2 weeks at a time, another time, 2 weeks at a time.
And were you playing in piano trios?
Piano trio.
Yeah.
And indeed, I remember my dear friend who left us just a few years ago, the great pianist Ray Bryant, had told the host...
Who wrote Cubano Chant.
Exactly.
One of the great standards.
Yeah, Little Susie and all these other great
songs. He's a great writer as well as a great player.
Exactly. Well, Ray has told the club operator there, a man named Teddy Hill, who had a big band in the 30s or the 40s. And in fact, the first time John Burks Gillespie got his nickname, it was Teddy calling him, "Man, you sure act dizzy." And that's how it stuck, you know. But he hired me, and, you know, he came to me and said, "Man, you're the first trio playing in here since Errol Garner." I said, "What?" Because that's a privilege, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I'm playing in Harlem in this, it was like I was back downtown Kingston, you know, because I would be in those areas with the grit of what we have in jazz, you know, the soul of it all. So that was like being in Harlem where Duke Ellington, Langston Hughes, all these incredible people.
Epicenter of African-American
epicenter,
culture.
Right. No, of course, New Orleans for what it was, because that's what I heard in Jamaica as well, the rhythm and blues music. Kingston, where I come from, Harlem, I call it the Express. It's the imaginary train going from place to place musically for me. So yeah. It was just a little catchphrase.
It's a wonderful journey between exactly. the two. Let's go forward in history. Let's jump to 69 when you already established in America. You've been playing, as you've just explained. And you made this really, really excellent album with a great vibraphone player called Milt Jackson, one of the great masters of the instrument. Recorded at Shelly Man's Club, the Manhole,
that's right.
on the West Coast. That's right. The way it is. How did you come to work with Milt Jackson?
It started with me meeting Ray Brown, who was one of my musical heroes. I just sensed that sound of his bass when I heard him on those recordings with Oscar Peterson.
Yeah.
Many people's idea of how it's supposed to go, right? Oscar being one of many people about how it's supposed to go.
Was Oscar one of your...
Oscar was definitely one of my great influences, but I loved those piano players that were kind of orchestral. They played a whole piano.
Yeah.
It wasn't just single note piano playing like trumpet player would play, but the whole piano, the harmony, the chords, the bass section, the top, that's what the piano does. It's 88
it's
notes.
Orchestral, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, but it's what you make it. And those were the piano players that I admired because they did this whole thing. And it was Errol Garner, it was Ahmad Jamal, it was Nat King Cole. Nat Cole wrote the book on this whole thing.
We forget he was a fantastic pianist as well as a great singer.
Exactly. So I met Ray, and there was this family resemblance to my mother's brother. So I felt like I was...
You had to play with him.
I knew Ray, this monument of what a bass note should sound like.
Yeah.
And he was just instantly friendly towards me. He said, "Hey, kid, how you doing? What's happening?" You know, and I started hanging out with him. And I was in Los Angeles. He was playing bass on the Merv Griffin Show, which is one of the popular TV shows in the 60s, 70s, just as a fill-in gig, you know. And I met him, and he said, "Yeah, well, I got a gig tonight. I'm playing with these local guys, but it's not a real jazz club. I'll leave your name at the door." And I went down, and he was there with some local players, Munda Lowe, Frankie Cap, these people, and a piano player. And they had to play one last song for the set, the end of the night. And everybody goes back on the bandstand to play this last tune. And there was hardly anybody in the club because they were, drinking in another part of the club. And the piano was sitting there all by itself. Why? Because the piano player was at the bar had a few too many. And the piano was just sitting there by itself. And so I said, "Hey."
So you thought, there's your chance.
And I just couldn't help myself, you know. I said, "Yeah, sure." And the next thing you know, within two choruses, man, it was like fire. Fire and brimstone on the bandstand with Ray and myself. And he invited me there and then to come and join him and Milt Jackson.
And Milt Jackson.
That summer at Shelley's. And I lived in New York, and that was in Los Angeles. And I went there, and I was the beginning of a beautiful friendship, and I played a lot with both Ray and Milt together and separately.
Great. Well, let's hear That's the Way It Is by Monty Alexander, featured with the great Milt Jackson.
Thank you. the way it is. Before we leave the bandstand, how about a nice round of applause for Dick Burke on drums? On piano, we have Monty Alexander. On tenor saxophone, Teddy Edwards. On bass, the fabulous Ray Brown. Thank you very much. It's been a wonderful audience. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Milt Jackson featuring the great Monty Alexander, That's the Way It Is. Monty, so we've been talking about this fantastic connection that you made with American musicians, which continues to this day. George Benson is featured on the new album, along with Ramsey Lewis and Joe Sample. So you've always engaged with these musicians in America. But your Jamaican collaborators have also been very important. I think that the key person that springs to mind, and probably the first person whose music I heard you feature on, was the amazing guitarist Ernest Ranglin.
Yes,
with absolutely. Whom you've had a long association.
Indeed.
When did you first start playing with him?
I remember in the studios, I think, but I saw him playing at one of the hotels with this favorite piano player of mine from Jamaica, Aubrey Adams, and Aubrey had this job at a hotel called the Courtly Manor, and I used to go there and watch them play, just sit there and listen, and they play all the standards, because Aubrey and Ernie, in addition to being this Jamaican master of the guitar, he had a repertoire. He could play anything. He'd play a polka, he'd play a blues, he'd play a ballad, he had a repertoire that's limitless, it seems.
He's also
like
a great arranger of music.
Oh, yes,
as well.
He's just a master musician, yeah. You know, self-taught for the most part, taught himself how to read but he has a wizardry, a magic about how he played the guitar. It wasn't that he was a great guitar player. It was that Ernie came out in each note he played. And I saw this quality. And when I saw that, I couldn't explain it. But I think Ernie, even though he was playing the guitar, became one of my big influences on how you handle you're expressing yourself through the instrument.
It's the feeling that he manages to convey through the instrument. It's not just about the notes.
He's
emotional as well.
Yeah, but he's telling you stories while he's playing. He's telling jokes. He's giving you a touch of drama and tragedy here and there. And it is always basically a smile on everything he's playing. And, you know, the fun and the games with the guitar. He's on the high end of the guitar. There's no end to what he may or may not do, except smash the guitar like other guys have done, right?
I don't think he needs to do that.
He doesn't need to do that. And just a delightful, fun-loving fella, you know. And I became friendly with Ernie, and I started doing little we did a few recordings, and I just got to know Ernie. And when I came to America and I had an invitation to record in Germany for MPS Records.
MPS label, yeah.
Exactly.
It's a great label, yeah.
And I didn't want to go there by myself. I was a little lonely. I said, I don't know anybody in this brand new place. And by the way, Oscar Peterson, of all people, the great master himself, told those guys in German to record me. He was like, a supporter of mine. You know, he saw me as somebody.
You had a network, as it were, of great people around you. You talk mm-hmm. about this connection with Ray Brown, who's obviously Oscar Peterson's rock in the rhythm section, and then Oscar Peterson putting a word in for you as well. It's fantastic.
These heroes of mine putting, you know, slapping me on the back, saying, "Hey, kid." One of them was Les McCann. First album I made, Les hooked me up with World Pacific.
Another great pianist.
You know, I got to know Ahmad Jamal very well, one of the great masters of all American music, you know.
You were really embraced by the American jazz community.
Yeah, I mean, part of the whole thing, whatever talent I had to fit in or to magnify the situation a bit with my joy, I guess it was, I learned, hey, man, you got to come with respect. Respect these people. And thereby, hopefully they respect you. And I come there, when I heard my elder speaking, I shut my mouth as much as I could and just realized I was in the presence of real, that's where the education comes from. Now you have all these great schools teaching young people about this, that, the other. And boy, they're learning, man. And there's some incredible talents coming out. But the unfortunate fact is that they don't have the chance to sit at the feet of a master, even though he was a raggedy guy who's, you know, just didn't have the finer way of looking at life. But when he picked up that horn, he told a story.
It's how you engage with the person as well as the music.
I try to tell other players who are interested in knowing, and I remind myself that one of the best things you can do when you go to play your instrument, whatever that instrument is, how did you feel when you were a child? And you first sat at your piano or your guitar or your saxophone when you pick it up to play when you were a child, when you were a kid. And that's what I get from some of those masters of all. And when Sonny Rollins picks up his tenor sax, he's a kid again. And then he goes off into wherever he goes. But that's the attitude.
It's the joy of discovery, which, it's such a key thing in music. I mean, we were talking about Ernest Ranglin. In the 90s, the two of you came back. I'd say you were hitting hard with these two albums that you both made. Yard Movement, which is your record, and Ernest Ranglin's Below the Basement. And one of the great tracks from Yard Movement was Exodus. In fact, you did a really a nice little connection between the jazz world and the reggae world in that you covered the Exodus theme from the movie, which had been covered by many jazz musicians like Eddie Harris, etc. And then you covered Bob Marley's Exodus, which we're going to listen to. Well, and reggae's always been a very important thing for you, isn't it?
Reggae's a Jamaicanized way of getting to the groove. Jamaicans say, we're going to do it this way. And I was already taken with everything coming out of New Orleans. Roscoe Gordon was a big hero in Jamaica. Fats Domino, Little Richard, all that music that came out of New Orleans. Huey Piana Smith, Professor Long here, you know. Jamaicans just put their flavors on it. It's like you put the pickle pepper sauce, you know, if you know what that is, right?
Your own flavor, yeah. Exactly what that is, yeah. And you've carried that through your music all the time, that kind of New Orleans, Kingston, Harlem, that connection, the diaspora. It's really the African diaspora, isn't it, through the music?
Really.
Well, it's great to talk about this, but it's even better to listen to it. So we're going to play a track from the 1996 album Yard Movement. This is the version of Exodus. It's been a joy talking to you. Thank you very much for coming in.
Pleasure.
Bob Marley's Exodus, played by Monty Alexander, and our thanks to Kevin for that interview. And for more info on all things Monty, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. You're listening to Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. The South Coast, where I live, is rich with great jazz talent, and one of the very busy and charismatic players that I've come across recently is bassist Terry Pack. I recently listened to his new album on my way to a gig, and I was really impressed with Terry's writing and the brilliant musicians playing alongside him. After 30 years of being a professional bass player, this is only Terry's second album as a leader. It's called Palimpsest, and I've chosen the track El Pueblo Nuevo.
Thank you.
El Pueblo Nuevo, written by bassist Terry Pack, who played there with Mark Edwards on piano, Enzo Zerilli on drums, Simon Webster on congas, James McMillan playing trumpet and flugel, Rob Leek on flute, clarinet and tenor saxophone, and the voices were Terry and Rachel Monroe with Jim White. That CD is out on the Symbol record label and it's called Palimpsest. This is Jazz Line Up on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Time now for highlights of an award-winning concert performed by the Philip Ayres Quartet, who were crowned winners of this year's European Jazz Competition, which was held on July the 5th at the Lanteren Venster in Rotterdam. The foundation of the European Jazz Competition was set up back in 2006 in Amsterdam with goals to increase the artistic, social and promotional development of young European jazz talent on a global scale. There were five bands competing this year. The UK was represented by the Roller Trio, but it was the harmonica player Philip Ayres who was the lucky winner. The jury verdict stated, "This band offered sensitive communication, outstanding arrangements and an intriguing choice of repertoire." The band's lineup is Philip Ayres on chromatic harmonica, Henrik Hallberg on guitar, Johan Lindbom on double bass, and Will Allen on drums. The band opened their set with a traditional Swedish tune, Polska, after Jakob Brunn.
Thank you very much. I just have to take that breath now. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm having a good time. We are Philip Jers Quartet from Stockholm, Sweden. We came down today, and we are very happy that you're here when we are here. We will play our last tune now. And this one, I will tell you a little bit about harmonicas. I mean, how many here have tried to play harmonica? Cool. And how many own a harmonica? Ah, good. That's a good quote, anyway. But now I have played on chromatic harmonicas, this big one, the Brugi, or what you said. It's a C and C sharp instrument in one, so it's C major, and then I press this button, and then it turns to C sharp, so I swap between those. And now I will play on the smaller one, the blues harmonica, or diatonic harmonica. And that's a good one as well. You should not forget it. It's mostly, I mean, for playing. Like blues. And then it also, but it was more developed for, you know. This kind of party trick stuff. Anyway, our tune will be like a salute or homage to the first harmonica music that I've heard. It was my father playing, actually, and I think I was 3 or 4 years, and he was sitting on the stair to our house. And it was a very, like, thunder afternoon, so it was a lot of tension. And I heard the sound of a harmonica, like wailing nice notes, and I was, oh, what is that? I have to go there. So since then, I knew the sound, and he was playing like in a, what could you say, American style, from like the music on Brokeback Mountain, for example, or in that manner, actually. So I wrote this tune when I saw some very nice wild big eagles in the archipelago in Stockholm. And I wrote a tune called The Eagle's Eye. Thank you. Thank you.
The Eagle's Eye by the Philip Ayers Quartet, much deserved winners of the 2014 European Jazz Competition, and so nice to hear harmonica in that setting. For more information on that competition, go to the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. Well, that's nearly it from Jazz Lineup this week, but there's plenty more jazz on Radio 3 with Jeffrey Smith tonight at midnight and Jess Nelson on Monday night at 11. This week, Jez has music from trumpeter Wadada Leo Smith performing pieces from his work, Ten Freedom Summers, at London's Café Otto. And on next week's Jazz Lineup, the second part of a concert set from guitarist John Scofield's Uber Jam Band, and a preview of the 2014 Highgate Jazz with Soul Festival in the company of festival director Brandon Allen. But to sign off with tonight, here's a current release on ECM Records, featuring two of the biggest names in jazz, pianist Keith Jarrett and the late great bassist Charlie Hayden, who sadly passed away last month. These celebrated musicians played together on and off for over 40 years, and this album was their second duet outing, which was recorded from 4 days of playing and recording in Jarrett's home studio back in 2007. Here they are at their lyrical best on Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight. Till next time from me, Claire Martin. Bye-bye.
Round Midnight, played by Keith Jarrett and Charlie Hayden, ending this week's jazz lineup. This is BBC Radio 3. It's 7:30. Time to go live to the Royal Albert Hall for this evening's prom, which is presented by Martin Handley.
Thank you very much, Jill. Well, last week we welcomed the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic to the 2014 BBC Proms. Tonight, it's the other grand old orchestra from the northwest, the Halle, which, like the Liverpool Phil under Vasily Petrenko, has been thoroughly reinvented over the last decade or so by its chief conductor, Sir Mark Elder. In the second half of their programme, Beethoven's groundbreaking Third Symphony, the Eroica, is preceded by the London premiere of the first work written for the Halle by its current associate composer, Helen Grime, her nocturnal piece, Near Midnight. The first part of the programme has the sea at its heart, the mezzo-soprano Alice Coote, the soloist, in Elgar's setting of five maritime poems, Sea Pictures.
Well, I think it's an absolutely terrific programme of contrasts. I've wanted to do the Sea Pictures with Alice at the Proms for a long time. The Eroica, it's a wonderful work to do in the Albert Hall Saturday night. We wanted to bring something of Helen's to London, our new composer in association. And I wanted to start the evening off with a firecracker.
Well, Mark Elder's Firecracker is an overture full of Byronic flair, Berlioz's Le Corsaire. The composer had been told by his doctor after the breakup of his marriage he needed to get away from it to recover from his physical and nervous exhaustion. The place he chose was Nice, where he stayed in a tower overlooking a glorious view of the Mediterranean. Exhausted or not, the majority of the overture Berlioz wrote there could hardly be more frenetic. He first called it La Tour de Nice for obvious reasons, but later changed the title to reflect the writings of first Fenimore Cooper and then Byron. Admittedly, Byron's poem, The Corsair, fascinated Berlioz, but this overture is really far more to do with the atmosphere of Nice and the Mediterranean as seen from Berlioz's tower. Well, the Halle's leader, Lynn Fletcher, is already in place, just been tuning the orchestra. A packed house here on this Saturday evening in South Kensington. It's been a busy day. The Halle rehearsed in the afternoon. In the morning, we had Sir Neville Mariner and the Academy of St Martin in the Fields rehearsing for tomorrow, together with Joshua Bell. But all that is in the past. Now we just await Mark Elder to get things underway. And here he comes. Onto the platform at the Royal Albert Hall, joining the Halle to perform Berlioz's overture, Le Corsaire.